Canto the Second. Lyle's Tale Continued.
Another day, and yet another glides away. The Saxon stern, the pagan Dane, maraud on Britain's shores again. Arthur, of Christendom the flower, lies loitering in a lady's bower. The horn, that foemen wont to fear, sounds but to wake the Cumbrian deer, and Caliburn, the British pride, hangs useless by a lover's side. Another day, and yet another glides away. Heroic plans in pleasure drowned, he thinks not of the Table Round. In lawless love dissolved his life. He thinks not of his beauteous wife. Better he loves to snatch a fleur from the bosom of his paramour than from a Saxon knight to wrest the honors of his heathen crest. Better to wreathe mid tresses brown the heron's plume her hawk struck down than o'er the altar give to flow the banners of a paynim foe. Thus, week by week, and day by day, his life inglorious glides away. But she, that soothes his dream, with fear beholds his hour of waking near. Much force have mortal charms to stay our peace in virtue's toilsome way. But Gwendolyn's might far outshines each maid of merely mortal line. Her mother was of more human birth, her sire a genie of the earth. In days of old deemed to preside over lovers' wiles and beauty's pride, by youths and virgins worshipped long with festive dance and choral song. Till, when the cross to Britain came, on heathen altars died the flame. Now, deep in Wastdale's solitude, the downfall of his rites he rued, and born of his resentment heir, he trained to guile that lady fair, to sink in slothful sin and shame the champions of the Christian name. Well skilled to keep vain thoughts alive, and all to promise, not to give. The timid youth had hope in store. The bold and pressing gained no more. As wildered children leave their home after the rainbow's arch to roam, her lovers bartered fair esteem, faith, fame, and honor for a dream. Her sire's soft arts the soul to tame, she practiced thus till Arthur came. Then frail humanity had part, and all the mother claimed her heart, forgot each rule her father gave, sunk from a princess to a slave. Too late must Gwendolyn deplore, he that has all can hope no more. Now must she see her lover strain at every turn her feeble chain, watch to new bind each knot, and shrink to view each fast decaying link. Art she invokes to nature's aid, her vest to zone, her locks to braid. Each varied pleasure heard her call, the feast, the tourney, and the ball. Her storied lore next she applies, taxing her mind to aid her eyes, now more than mortal wise, and then in female softness sunk again. Now raptured, with each wish complying, with feigned reluctance now denying. Each charm she varied to retain a varying heart, and all in vain. Thus, in the garden's narrow bound, flanked by some castle's Gothic round, fain would the artist's skill provide the limits of his realms to hide. The walks in labyrinths he twines, shade after shade with skill combines, with many a varied flowery knot, and copse and arbor decks the spot, tempting the hasty foot to stay and linger on the lovely way. Vain art, vain hope, 'tis fruitless all. At length we reach the bounding wall, and sick of flower and trim-dressed tree, long for rough glades and forest free. 3 summer months had scantly flown when Arthur, in embarrassed tone, spoke of his liegemen and his throne, said all too long had been his stay, and duties which a monarch sway, duties unknown to humbler men, must tear her knight from Gwendolyn. She listened silently the while, her mood expressed in bitter smile. Beneath her eye must Arthur quail, and oft resume the unfinished tale, confessing, by his downcast eye, the wrong he sought to justify. He ceased. A moment mute she gazed, and then her looks to heaven she raised, one palm her temples veiled to hide the tear that sprung in spite of pride. The other, for an instant, pressed the foldings of her silken vest. At her reproachful sign and look, the hint the monarch's conscience took. Eager he spoke, "No, lady, no, deem not of British Arthur so, nor think he can desert or prove to the dear pledge of mutual love. I swear by scepter and by sword, as belted knight and Britain's lord, that if a boy shall claim my care, that boy is born a kingdom's heir. But if a maiden fate allows to choose that maid a fitting spouse, a summer day in list shall strive my knights, the bravest knights alive, and he, the best and bravest tried, shall Arthur's daughter claim for bride." He spoke with voice resolved and high. The lady deigned him not reply. At dawn of morn, ere on the brake his matins did a warbler make, or stirred his wing to brush away a single dewdrop from the spray, ere yet a sunbeam through the mist the castle battlements had kissed, the gates revolve, the drawbridge falls, and Arthur sallies from the walls, doffed his soft garb of Persia's loom, and steel from spur to helmet plume his Libyan steed full proudly trode, and joyful neighed neath his load. The monarch gave a passing sigh to penitence and pleasures by, when, lo, to his astonished ken, appeared the form of Gwendolen. Beyond the outmost wall she stood, attired like huntress of the wood, sandaled her feet, her ankles bare, and eagle plumage decked her hair. Firm was her look, her bearing bold, and in her hand a cup of gold. "Thou goest," she said, "and ne'er again must we two meet in joy or pain. Full fain would I this hour delay, though weak the wish, yet wilt thou stay? No, thou look'st forward. Still, attend. Part we like lover and like friend." She raised the cup. "Not this the juice the sluggish vines of earth produce. Pledge we at parting in the draught which genie love," she said, and quaffed. And strange unwonted lustres fly from her flushed cheek and sparkling eye. The courteous monarch bent him low, and stooping down from saddle bow, lifted the cup in act to drink. A drop escaped the goblet's brink. Intense as liquid fire from hell, upon the charger's neck it fell. Screaming with agony and fright, he bolted 20 feet upright. The peasant still can show the dint where his hoofs alighted on the flint. From Arthur's hand the goblet flew, scattering a shower of fiery dew that burned and blighted where it fell. The frantic steed rushed up the dell as whistles from the bow the reed. Nor bit nor rein could check his speed until he gained the hill. Then breath and sinew failed apace, and reeling from the desperate race, he stood exhausted, still. The monarch, breathless and amazed, back on the fatal castle gazed. Nor tower nor dungeon could he spy, darkening against the morning sky, but on the spot where they once frowned, the lonely streamlet brawled around a tufted knoll where dimly shone fragments of rock and rifted stone. Musing on this strange hap awhile, the king wends back to fair Carlisle, and cares that cumber royal sway, war memory of the past away. Full 15 years and more were sped. Each brought new wreaths to Arthur's head. 12 bloody fields with glory fought, the Saxons to subjection brought. Rhython, the mighty giant slain by his good brand, relieved Britain. The Pictish Gillamore in fight, and Roman Lucius owned his might. And wide were though the world were through the world renowned, the glories of his table round. Each knight who sought adventurous fame to the bold court of Britain came, and all who suffered causeless wrong from tyrant proud or traitor strong sought Arthur's presence to complain, nor therefore aid implored in vain. For this the king, with pomp and pride, held solemn court at Whitsuntide, and summoned prince and peer. All who owned homage for their land, or who craved knighthood from his hand, or who had succor to demand, to come from far and near. At such high tide were glee and game mingled with feats of martial fame, for many a stranger champion came in list to break a spear. And not a knight in Arthur's host, save that he trod on some foreign coast, but at this feast of Pentecost before him must appear. Ah, minstrels, where the Table Round arose, with all its warriors crowned, there was a theme for bards to sound in triumph to their string. 500 years are past and gone, but time shall draw his dying groan ere he behold the British throne begirt with such a ring. The heralds named the appointed spot as Caerleon or Camelot or Carlisle, fair and free. At Penrith now the feast was set, and in fair Eamont's vale were met the flower of chivalry. There Galahad sat with manly grace, yet maiden meekness in his face. There Morolt of the Iron Mace, and lovelorn Tristram there, and Dinadan with lively glance, and Lanval with the fairy lance, and Mordred with his look askance, Brunor and Bedivere. Why should I tell of numbers more? Sir Kay, Sir Bannier, Sir Bor, Sir Caradoc the Keen, the gentle Gawains, courteous Lore, Hector de Maris and Pellinore, and Lancelot, that evermore looked stolen-wise on the queen. When wine and mirth did most abound, and harpers played their blithest round, a shrilly trumpet shook the ground, and marshals cleared the ring. A maiden, on a palfrey white, heading a band of damsels bright, paced through the circle to alight and kneel before the king. Arthur, with strong emotion, saw her graceful boldness checked by awe. Her dress, like huntress of the wold, her bow and baldric trapped with gold, her sandaled feet, her ankles bare, and the eagle plume that decked her hair. Graceful her veil she backward flung. The king, as from his seat he sprung, almost cried, "Gwendolyn!" But 'twas a face more frank and wild, betwixt the woman and the child, where less of magic beauty smiled than of the race of men. And in the forehead's haughty grace, the lines of Britain's royal race, Pendragon's, you might ken.